This is a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, Return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. You sweep them away as with a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed, and in the evening it fades and withers. For we are brought to an end by your anger. By your wrath we are dismayed. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger and your wrath according to the fear of you? So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, and for as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be shown to your servants, and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Danny. It is so good to be back in the Psalms. My faith would not be what it is today apart from the Psalms. I love the Psalms. It's one of our habits as a church family to return an intentional rhythm of life in the church, worship life, to return to the Psalms each summer. In the same way that the Psalms formed the ancient worship life of Israel, like we want that as a people, a God-centered, Christ-exalting, Spirit-guided worship. And the Psalms take us there. So we come back to the Psalms each summer as a like purposeful rhythm to form our lives in that way. The Psalms speak so frequently because the Psalms speak so frequently about a true and better king. And because Jesus, in the New Testament, said, I am the fulfillment of that king. I am that king. And he loved to quote the Psalms. Because of that, the church, historically, from its earliest days, has adopted the Psalms for worship. In other words, the Psalms are not force-fit into Christianity. The whole Hebrew Bible finds its fulfillment in Jesus, especially the Psalms. The Psalms were Jesus' playlist. If you open Jesus' Spotify, you would just see Psalm 1, Psalm 2, Psalm 3, Psalm 4, Psalm 5, Psalm 6. He loved the Psalms. So many reasons we love the Psalms. Here's the one that hit me most recently. I love the Psalms because they defy a simplistic faith. The Psalms will not tolerate a simplistic, superficial, shallow faith. In fact, the Psalms are recognized in ancient literature, even by unbelieving scholars, as some of the most sophisticated, brilliant poetry ever written. Moses, David, Asaph, They were the best of the creatives. They present to us worship and life in such a real, authentic way. It's raw, it's not sanitized, sometimes even questioning and challenging. These are not men who have all the answers. Here's why this matters. It matters because people are leaving the church in droves right now. That's why the Psalms matter. Because people are leaving the church in droves. I read yet another story last week in NPR of an ex-evangelical named John Ward, who's written a book called Testimony. And in it, he's basically saying, the Christianity that I was exposed to was superficial, hollow, manipulated, controlling. I don't want that kind of faith. So he left the church. He didn't get that from the Psalms. The Psalms will challenge anyone's superficial, hollow faith. I love the Psalms because they defy a cheap, simplistic, we have all the answers kind of faith. If you're considering Christianity for the first time, or maybe you're returning to Christianity because, you know, you grew up in the church and then you left the church for a little while and you're like, well, they don't have a lot of answers out there either. And so maybe you're returning to the church. And I mean, that's happening these days, right? Also, people aren't just leaving. If you're returning or considering Christianity, come to the Psalms. Like, come. This is real faith in the book of Psalms. It's so life-giving, so inspiring. Psalm 90 divides naturally into three stanzas. And we were singing about the first stanza just about all morning. The greatness of God. Secondly, the dustiness of man. And third, a prayer, because we have nowhere else to turn. So let me walk you through those. The greatness of God, verses 1 and 2. Psalm 90 begins where we should always begin, with the greatness of God. I mean, to whom else will every king bow down? That's such a great line in that song. Only a holy God. The greatness of God. Look at verse 1 of Psalm 90. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you formed the earth and the world. Look at this. From forever to forever. That's how one translator gives it to us. From forever to forever, you are God. It's not enough for Moses to say the earth is our dwelling place. We all know we live here. Or that the temple is our dwelling place. Everyone went there to worship. Or that the promised land, right, would one day be our dwelling. It's not enough to say that any of those places are our dwelling place. This psalm is attributed to Moses. He knew what it was like to live in a tent. He knew what it was like to live in the hope of something future, of a land, of a place of peace and settledness. Of all people, Moses knew how to long for that place. And yet, look what it says. You, God. Moses is saying, you, God, not the promised land, not the temple, not this little half acre you cut out for me here in 24018. You are my dwelling place. And you're big enough to be that for all generations through the history of the world. That's the greatness of God. Look at the verb tense in verse 2. So Moses is a little bit confused as he's writing this psalm. He's moving around with his verb tenses. No, he's not confused. He's making a point. You have been our dwelling place because you are God, and you always will be God. He's making a statement about the eternal existence of God. How confident would you be? Here's a question. How confident would you be in a God who was, say, 1,000 years? 1,000 sounds like a lot, right? 1,000 years old? How confident would you be in a God who was, say, 5,000 years old? That's getting better. 10,000? 100,000. How confident would you be in a God who was 100,000 years old? Moses says, now you got to find your confidence in a God who transcends time and life and is bigger than you could ever possibly imagine. Like, let the greatness and the power and the majesty of God that he's talking about here, let it hit you. God is so big. Let it give you hope today. When you're exhausted because parenting is a long journey, or grandparenting is a long journey, maybe things didn't turn out with your grandchildren like you thought they were going to, or when you're embarrassed because of what the cancer has done to your body, or bring it a little closer to home this weekend, maybe you're fixated in an unhealthy way. You're fixated on the hopelessness of our country right now. Maybe, and some of you have even been depressed about it because you've said that to me. Wherever you are, believe today again in the greatness of God. Like that the Lord sat enthroned at the flood and he sits as king forever. God is still in charge. God's greatness is overwhelming. God's greatness is amazing. God is so in charge of this world, so sovereign, so powerful. And yet it's so easy for us to miss that. Believe again in the greatness of God. That's the first stanza. There's three stanzas. The second stanza, and really the first stanza was all set up for the main theme of the psalm, which starts here in verse 3. It runs 3 through 11. So the main theme of the psalm, second stanza, is that life is short. The transience of life, the brevity of life, the... Well, verse 3, you return man to the dust of the ground and say, return, O children of man. So the second stanza is really about our dustiness, our temporariness. You, God, return man to the place from which you made him. From the dust of the ground. Moses, who also wrote the book of Genesis, is talking creation and fall language here. Like, that's what's happening in verse 3. He's bringing back the language of the fall. And Genesis 3:19, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. He's saying we're all sons of Adam or daughters of Eve, and in Adam all die. And all will return to the dust. Dallas Willard said this, we are so presumptuous. We humans can almost forget we are but dust. Or Matthew Henry, the old Puritan commentator, said this, is so good. The house of clay in which man dwells is in the dust. Some have a higher heap of dust to stand on than others, but still the earth holds us up. And it will swallow us up shortly. In Psalm 90, our dustiness means two things. It means we're sinful. We're sinful. It secondly means we're temporary. Verses 7, 8, and 9 show us the really a robust doctrine of sin. If you wanted to build out a doctrine of sin from Psalm 90, you could do it. It's all here. Like, one of the key things to observe in Psalm 90 is the effect of sin. God brings life and wholeness and integration. Sin brings death. separation, emptiness, disintegration. And so the psalmist here confesses without hesitation that God would be right to be angry. We are, verse 7, we are brought to an end by your anger, and by your wrath we are dismayed. You have set, look at verse 8, you have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. I was just thinking about how often we put things on display. We set things out. We want people to see them, whether it's in a window or whether it's at the house. You organize things and then you set them out so that they can be featured, so that they can be seen, so that they can be appreciated for what they are. God exposes and sets before himself and others often our secret sins. Look at that. Look at verse 8. It's really staggering. It'll tighten you up a little bit. Verse 8 should sober you. Look at this. God, you have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. We like to hide our sins. But God, he, in his mercy, he sees and he exposes. One of the hardest things you will ever experience is the exposing of your sin, but it's the best thing that could happen to you. Secondly, we are so temporary. Look at this. Verses 5 and 6. Our earthly lives are short. Verse 5 says, you sweep them away as with a flood. Like, the way he's building out his argument that you are God and we are dust and you return us to dust when you're ready, the way he builds it out is through a couple of analogies, a couple of illustrations to show how temporary we are, a flood of water and then withering grass. Verse 5, you sweep them away as with a flood. That's got to be a reference to Genesis. It's got to be a reference to the great deluge over the depravity of man. This is God's power. He can sweep our lives away like a flood if he chooses to. Or grass, like the beautiful grass that seems to be flourishing in the morning, and then by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's on its way to death. That's what our lives are like, he says, right? Your life is like a vapor, James says. Like a mist, here and then it vanishes. We are so temporary. We're so small. So what you get in this psalm is the bigness of God, right? You're feeling that? And then the smallness of man. We had really a great time at the Outer Banks on vacation. And so it was not this past Monday, but the one before. We took the paddle boards out into the Atlantic. It was just calm enough. From that day on, it was really, the ocean was a little bit too angry. But on Monday, we could get out with the paddle boards. And so Katie and I were paddling out on two paddle boards into the Atlantic. And we got about 100 yards off of the breakers. And we're just looking at the vastness of the ocean. And it was amazing. I'm like having a dad moment. I'm like, I'm with my daughter in the ocean. This is amazing. And I said, Katie, look at the vastness of this. Look how big God is. I'm like a speck. She said, Dad, you're not even a speck. Oh, leave it to your 16-year-old daughter to check you down from speck to subspeck. That's really how small we are. God is so big. Find your hope in the bigness of God. Verse 10, as a transition to the next point, look at verse 10. The years of our life are 70, or by reason of strength, 80. So if you're 70 or 71 or older, just slip up your hand. See, you got it good. You are doing great. If you get to 70, the psalmist says everything else is bonus round. Or by reason of strength, 80. Now, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, verse 10 doesn't mean anything to you. When you're in your 20s and your 30s and you read Psalm 90, you're like, yeah, that's cool. Because you're super, like you're bulletproof. You got a whole life ahead of you. But when you turn the corner on 50, you start reading this psalm differently. Right? Can I get a witness? Seriously. Therefore, this is the third stanza, third point. Therefore, pray for a new heart. Teach us to number our days. Famous verse, verse 12. So you can see the three stanzas now, right? So when you get to verse 12, you hit that third stanza, there's a movement from the first two great confessions of God and of man, who we are, who he is, who we are. And then it moves into this third, so, or therefore, right? You see it? So therefore, teach us, Lord, to number our days, so that we might get a new heart, a heart full of wisdom and a heart full of an awareness of your grace. Satisfy us, make us glad, give us true happiness. Like that's all happening in 13, 14, and 15. Make us glad for as many days as we suffered in Egypt or in the wilderness or in this present life. Make us truly glad. Give us true gladness. So teach us to number our days so that we may get a heart of wisdom. This is a prayer. The third stanza is a prayer. The whole thing is a prayer. The whole of the third stanza is pleading with God. Now, when we pray, we are not earning. We are not deserving, right? We are not controlling. We're not manipulating. When we pray, we are asking. We are yielding. We are hoping. And we hope for a new perspective on everything about our lives. So, Lord, teach us to number our days that we might have new hearts, hearts full of wisdom. Return to us. Give us this kind of life. Like, verse 12 is not a time management verse to make you more efficient in your career. That's not what it is. Emphatically not what it is. This is about the God who grants meaning and purpose to every day of every hour of your life. And who can take your life and withdraw your life back to himself as soon as he wants to, in just a moment. This is about your life having a lasting purpose and significance long after you're gone. Like, the greatness of God, the temporary nature of man, and this prayer, this pleading then is, the prayer is a plea, make my life count. Make my life matter. Give me purpose, significance. So I can live beyond this, like, short, brief moment in time. Dan Hall was with us on Wednesday night in our Wednesday night Bible study, and he had two of our men hold up a line, and that line stretched basically across the fellowship hall, and he took a little stick pin with a head on it. What do you call that stick pin with a head on it? What do you call it? A stick pin. Thank you. I just got a confirmation from one of our ladies on the front row. I feel really good about that. And they held this line out tight, and he took a stick pin, and he put it right in the middle. And he said, stop living for this little spot and start living for the line. Like, big picture, purpose, identity. So what are you living for? What is the most important thing that occupies your dreams, your time, your memory, your work, your, like, what do you keep, what's the thing? You know what it is. I don't have time to go through the thousand of them that everybody, like, but you know exactly what yours is. What's the thing that you have to be happy right now? So the psalmist says, let that be in a prayer for your life to be situated in the purpose and significance of God, what God intends for you, what He has for you. So it closes with verse 17. Let the favor then, because like anything we do really ends up being empty unless it's invested with life by God Himself. We're just spinning our wheels, right? He says, so let your work, verse 16, back up to verse 16, so let your work be shown to your servants. Help the next generation, Moses is saying, to see your work from creation to redemption. Let your work be shown to your servants and your glorious power to their children. Oh God, would you let them see the power of your deliverance like I saw it? And would you let your favor, that word can be translated beauty or kindness or adornment, right? Let your favor, like the smile of God, if God were somehow in His kindness willing to smile on your life,